an Osho talk.
Zen, the Diamond Thunderbolt,
number 11.
One day, when Master Kaizen got up in the hall to speak, a monk called Gazan came forward from the assembly and asked, "Why is it hard to speak of the place where not a breath enters?" Kaizen said, "Even speaking of it does not say it." Gazan had a flash of insight. But as he was about to open his mouth, Kaizen said, "Wrong." Scolded, Gazan withdrew. After this, his spirit of determination soared far beyond that of ordinary people. One night, as Kaizen was enjoying the moon along with Gazan, he said, "Do you know that there are two moons?" Gazan said, "No." Kaizen said, "If you don't know that there are two moons, you are not a seedling of the Toh succession." At this, Gazan increased his determination and sat cross-legged like an iron pole for years. One day, as Kaizen passed through the hall, he said, quoting Sukito, "Sometimes it is right to have him raise his eyebrows and blink his eyes. Sometimes it is right not to have him raise his eyebrows and blink his eyes." At these words, Gazan was greatly enlightened. Then, with full ceremony, he expressed his understanding. Gazan agreed with him.
Manisa. Is speaking about Zen is perhaps the most difficult thing in the world, because it is saying something about something which is absolutely inexpressible. But every master has come to this point to decide whether to say anything or to remain silent. Even Gautam Buddha, when he became enlightened, for 7 days did not speak a single word. Because he could not find a way how to say what he has found. Words don't exist for that experience. And whatever you say about it immediately becomes wrong. The moment the inner experience enters into outer expression, something goes dead. The living dance is no more there. The throbbing pulse is no more there. After 7 days, he was persuaded to speak. He argued very hardly on the point. He said, for the one point, what I have found cannot be said. I can only at the most indicate, just like a finger pointing to the moon, but it is not saying anything about the moon. And the danger is that unconscious people may start clinging to the finger rather than looking at the moon. And that has happened almost to all religions. They are holding their scriptures, holy scriptures. They are only fingers pointing to the moon. Where is the moon? Everybody is looking into his holy scriptures. Secondly, Gautam Buddha said that even if I manage somehow to figure out a way to express the inexpressible, there is almost 99% guarantee that it will be misunderstood. And the third point he said, I am willing even to speak for that 1% intelligentsia, people of the heart, people who are open, not closed. There is no certainty or guarantee. That they will not misinterpret me. And once I have said something, I am no more master of it. I am master of it while I am silent. His arguments are valid. And the people who were persuading him felt that what he is saying is right, but somehow he has to be convinced to speak, because it is very rare that once in a while a man comes to this highest peak of consciousness and if he remains silent, the humanity is not enriched by him. He could have soured the whole world with his blessings. He could have brought the whole world into a deep silence where understanding blossoms. No opportunity can be lost, and a Buddha is a great opportunity for the transformation of the whole world. So they insisted that your arguments are all right. We agree with you. Just one thing we want to say to you, that after millions of people a single person reaches to such heights, such depths, even if he is misunderstood, misinterpreted, it does not matter. At least 1% probably will understand him. And that is a big percentage as far as humanity is concerned. You cannot deny that 1% the great opportunity that has arisen in you. There may be few people just on the verge of awakening, a little puss, and they may be on the same height awake as you are. And even if you go on missing the target, what is the harm? People were unconscious, they will remain unconscious, but you have to be compassionate at least for 1% that you have accepted. Out of his compassion, Buddha agreed. And what he had said happened. Very few people understood him. Those who understood him became transformed beings, went through a metamorphosis, a new kind of light started shining through their being, a new aura of energy, like a cool breeze followed them. Millions misunderstood, misinterpreted, and you can see the result. Where Gautam Buddha was born, after his death, not a single Buddha in his own land, because the masses, with their ignorance, confusion, condemnation, distorted everything. 32 schools arose after Gautam Buddha's death, interpreting things into their own ways and fighting amongst themselves. And the old hold of the Indian priesthood, Brahmanism, did not miss the chance. The priest is always afraid of the awakened one, because he is the one who can destroy his whole profession. Jesus is not crucified by ordinary people. He is crucified by very scholarly rabbis, priests, and high priests of the temple of Jews in Jerusalem. They insisted that he should be crucified. Gautam Buddha has been opposed by the priests of India. The reason is the same. The priest is exploiting people in the name of God, of which he knows nothing. In the name of the spiritual, of which he has no idea. But whenever a person comes radiant with the experience, the priest becomes afraid. It is not a question of argument. You cannot argue with a Buddha. His very presence is convincing. He has not to utter even a word. If he utters some words, it is just to lead you towards wordlessness. He speaks so that you can become silent. His speaking is only a device. These anecdotes are tremendously beautiful and very symbolic. How the masters function in different ways on different disciples. Sometimes they succeed, but even if they succeed to awaken one human being, it is more than one can expect. The very experience is so valuable and so obvious and so inner that the ordinary humanity is not interested in it. It is involved into mediocre things, into things which ultimately mean nothing. The only thing that carries an ultimate meaning is the experience of your innermost being. These anecdotes are all concerned about the interiority of humanity. You will not find logic in them, but you will find love. You will not find all the things that people in the world desire and long, but you will find something superior, a great blissfulness. a peace that passeth understanding, a blessedness that becomes your very breathing, your very heartbeat. It all happens through meditation. Zen is another name of meditation. One day, when Master Kazan got up in the hall to speak, a monk called Kazan came forward from the assembly and asked, "Why is it hard to speak of the place where not a breath enters?" He is asking why it is hard to enter into the space of your own, where not even your own breath can enter. Your consciousness does not breathe. Its life is not dependent on breathing or on your heartbeat. It is life itself. It is not dependent on any causes. This is its freedom and its eternity. The question was perfectly right, but such questions cannot be answered in the easy way. Kazan said, "Even speaking of it does not say it. I can speak about it, but at the most I have to remind you that nothing is said about it. It remains always beyond words. In a certain fundamental sense, the moment the word leaves your lips, the meaning is left behind. On your ears fall words which have forgotten to carry the significance they are empty envelopes." Of course, addressed to you, but inside there is nothing. Kazan said, "Even speaking of, it does not say it." Kazan had a flash of insight, but as he was about to open his mouth, Kazan said, "Wrong. The master can see that the disciple has touched the inner space, because it is such a revolution in being, you cannot keep it hidden. It radiates. But out of old habit, Gazan was going to say something, and the master shouted at him, "Run! Whatever you say, it won't do. You have it, but don't say it. You are fortunate that you got it, but don't allow it to be distorted. And you are too fresh, too young in the inner world. Just let things settle. He scolded. Gazan withdrew. After this, his spirit of determination soared far beyond that of ordinary people. He has seen a glimpse, and he has also seen that the master does not want him to say a single word unless the whole truth has penetrated his being. He is soaked with it like a rain cloud and is ready to shower. Before that, keep quiet. Don't be in a hurry. He started meditating, silently sitting, waiting for the moment when the small glimpse becomes the great matter of realization. One night, as Kazan was enjoying the moon along with Gazan, he said, "Do you know that there are two moons?" Gazan said, "No." This is something immensely important. What he had seen on that day was just a reflection of the moon. And the reflection of the moon, although is the reflection of the moon, but it is not the moon. Enjoying the full moon, the master asked Gazan, "Do you know that there are two moons?" Gazan said, "No." Gazan said, "If you don't know that there are two moons, you are not a seedling of the two succession. You have to understand that in a silent space you can get the reflection of the reality. If your silence is deeper and without any ripples, the full moon will be reflected in it. But don't be deceived by the reflection. That reflection should indicate towards the moon. That reflection in the lake of your consciousness is simply a milestone on the eternal journey to the moon itself. There come many points in the seeker's life when he thinks he has come. It is the greatest function of the master to hit in those points the disciple and push him ahead, that there is much more ahead. I have told you a Sufi story. A poor woodcutter, very old and very poor and very alone, used to come to the forest where a mystic has made his small hut under a vast spreading tree. The woodcutter passed every day, but he could manage only one day's livelihood from his wood. He was old and it was difficult to carry it. But the story belongs to a very different climate and world. Although he has nothing to do with the mystic, whether the mystic was sitting there with closed eyes, R was inside the hut, R was gone out somewhere, he used to touch the steps leading to his hut. Every day coming and going both the times. One day the mystic said, "You are so old, and now it is not the right kind of work for you. Why don't you go a little ahead?" The poor man said, "Little ahead? What that will do to me?" The mystic said that just a little ahead there is a mine of copper. If you carry copper, it will give you at least 7 days' provisions instead of one day that you are getting now." The man was immensely impressed and he went. And he thanked the master that, "I would have never gone ahead if you had not said. And my God, my whole life I wasted in cutting wood and the copper was just nearby." The master laughed and said, "Don't stop, just go on a little more." He said, "For what?" The master said, "Just a little more. There is a silver mine." And so the story goes, every time the master says, "No, go a little more and you will find diamond." The day he found the diamonds, He came to the master, touched his feet and said, I am puzzled that you know all these secrets of this forest, but you never go anywhere. The master said, I have gone a little more ahead. To me, going to the diamonds will be going backwards. An instantaneous illumination happened to the poor woodcutter. He threw all his diamonds there and he said, then I am no more concerned with diamonds. If there is something beyond, and you know it, then introduce me to the beyond, because life is short and one never knows whether tomorrow I will see the sun again. I am not going to leave this door until you introduce me to the beyond. The master said, all this time I was hoping that one day you will ask. That day has come. And you are throwing all valuable diamonds, has already cleaned your mind of clinging. You are ready to have a taste of something that is not material. One night, Kezan was enjoying the moon along with Gazan. He said, do you know that there are two moons? Gazan said, no. Kezan said, if you don't know that there are two moons, you are not seedling, you are not a seed of a Buddha. And you cannot succeed me. And I have been hoping that you are a potential Buddha, as everyone is. And you have come here not to leave this place until you become the Buddha himself. At this, Gazan increased his determination, sat cross-legged like an iron pole for years. One day, as Kezan passed through the hall, he said, quoting Sekito, sometimes it is right to have him raise his eyebrows and blink his eyes. Sometimes it is right not to have him raise his eyebrows and blink his eyes. At these words, Gazan was greatly enlightened. Then with full ceremony, he expressed his understanding. Kezan agreed with him. Now, this is a little bit difficult that why in a certain moment anybody can read Sakito's statement, but that does not mean that by reading it he will become enlightened. There is nothing much in it. He is simply saying that there is nothing to be worried. Sometimes one is asleep and sometimes one is awake. Even Buddhahood should not become a concern. It should be an spontaneity. It will come in its own time as spring comes and thousands of flowers. All that you need is to learn waiting. And meditation is another name of a silent, patient, waiting for the right moment. In that right moment, anything which is absurd to outsiders, which makes no sense as far as reason and logic is concerned, Lao Tzu was sitting under a tree when an old leaf fell from the tree, just wavering, and he watched the leaf falling down from the tree. And he became enlightened. Now you can sit under any tree and you can watch thousands of leaves dropping and you will come home back as idiot as you have been. Because that falling of the leaf has nothing to do with enlightenment. Lao Tzu was meditating under that tree, and his meditation was ready. Any slight opportunity for opening the inner lotus and the immense experience explodes. What happened with this leaf? Because the leaf was falling with such grace and with such beauty, although it was death, soon it will disappear into the earth from where it has come. Instantly, a tremendous awareness like lightning flashed into Lao Tzu's mind that our consciousness is also come from a source, just as this leaf has come, manifested, and is going again into unmanifestation. Our consciousness has come from the eternal source. One day it will move again to its source. There is no need to search outside. Everything that is of any significance is inside. It is said for days he remained sitting with closed eyes, His disciples used to laugh about him, that nobody has ever heard that by a falling leaf anybody becomes enlightened. But if you look into the history of enlightenment, strange situations. About Mahavira it is said that he became enlightened in a posture that in India is well known, the cow milking posture. Just as somebody sits with a pot and milks the cow, I don't know what Mahavir was doing, whose cow he was milking. The scriptures say nothing. But he became enlightened in this posture. That does not mean that you should go and purchase a cow. Each enlightened human being has become enlightened in his own unique way. But when you become enlightened, only the master can recognize it. It needs the same experience the others are almost blind, they have never seen that light. They may believe, but they cannot recognize. One thing is certain, anybody who becomes enlightened, immediately a great ceremonious life style arises. He becomes festive. He becomes creative. He becomes a song. A dance. His life is no more of misery, suffering. In fact, even if the enlightened person tries just to have a taste what misery is, he is bound to fail. I have tried my best in the middle of night sitting in my bed and let us have a little misery. The whole world is having it. There must be something great in it. I have tried this way and that way. On this side and on that side, nothing happens. I have laughed in my aloneness, in the depths of night, that my God, what poverty, neither I can suffer, nor I can be miserable. No more life at all. Everybody is having great life. I am the poorest man. But failing many times, I dropped the idea. If I had known before, I would not have become enlightened. So I warn you, don't address me afterwards. Don't tell me afterwards that why you made me enlightened. Because you will lose all misery, all suffering, all great tragedies. One of the mystic women, Meera, has a beautiful song. In which she says, if I had known before, I would have gone house to house to tell people not to reach these heights. These heights are dangerous. They leave you utterly naked. But in this song, she is dancing and showing one of the most blissful women of the world. But she is just joking that if I had known before, I would have gone house to house to tell people not to become enlightened. I agree with her. Neither I knew anything about it before it happened. That's why I am calling it a lightning thunderbolt. You don't know when the lightning happens and hits your heart and transforms you. If you are too much in love with misery, please never meditate. Because I have suffered, so many things have simply disappeared. Just there is a pure space, so silent and so sacred, but everything else is gone. If you are ready to lose your misery and your suffering and your tragedies, then meditate. Otherwise, you will be angry with me. I am warning you. A Zen poem runs to display at last maturity of spirit. To the man of enlightenment, everybody else is simply retarded. Has not grown up. Everybody grows old, but that does not mean that everybody grows up. Growing old is a different direction, horizontal, from cradle to the graveyard, direct. You don't have to ask anybody where the graveyard is. You will reach. And everybody else is so ready. The moment you stop breathing, nobody bothers to wait. They immediately take you to the graveyard. But to grow up is a totally different dimension. It is vertical. It has nothing to do with age. It has nothing to do with time. It has something to do with maturity, integrity, a centeredness. Chora's haiku reads, moon gazing, looking at it, it clouds over. Not looking, it becomes clear. Zen has a very poetic way of expressing the inexpressibles. Now Chora is saying, if you look at it, clouds are going to hide the moon, because the very desire to look it creates clouds. Whenever you are full of desires, you are surrounded by clouds. And the moment you don't want anything, even you don't want to open your eyes, all clouds disappear. And the moon shines in an empty and silent sky. Another Zen poet, clouds come from time to time and bring to man a chance to rest from looking at the moon. In the world of Zen, there are few symbols which are especially used by Zen poets, Zen painters, Zen mystics, bamboos. You will come across again and again, because the bamboos has a quality of Zen. They are hollow inside. Inside there is nothing. And because of this nothingness, they can become a flute. Because of this inner hollowness, a son can be born out of it. Every bamboo has the capacity to become a flute. For these strange reasons, certain things have become very much symbolic of Zen. The moon, because it reflects in the lake, in the ocean, in the river. One moon and millions of reflections. One consciousness and millions of manifestations. So when you read Zen, remember its symbols are not ordinary dictionary meanings. They have a special quality to them. Clouds are used, you will come across in many references. This whole series is devoted to the clouds, because the cloud is the symbol in Zen of freedom. No roots. Nothing to tie it down. Every direction available to move. No map, no guide, but with what dignity and with what joy the cloud goes on moving from east to west, from west to east. The whole sky is its territory. It knows no boundaries. Because of certain reasons, Zen had picked up few symbols. You have to understand them in the Zen way. Manisha has asked, what is meant by maturity of spirit? Just awakening to your nothingness. This is the difficulty. Maturity will never give you the idea of nothingness. But unless you touch your inner space, which is nothingness, as silent and empty as the sky, it is your inner sky. Once you settle down in your inner sky, you have found a home, and a great maturity arises in your actions, in your behavior, then whatever you do has grace in it. Then whatever you do is a poetry in itself. You live poetry. Your walking becomes a dancing. Your silence becomes music. By maturity, is meant that you have come home. You are no more a child who has to grow. You have grown up. You have touched the height of your potential. For the first time in a strange sense, you are not and you are. You are not in your old ideas, imaginations, in your old comprehensions about yourself. All that is gone down the drain. Now something new arises in you, absolutely new and virgin, which transforms your whole life in joy. You have become a stranger to the miserable world. You don't create misery for yourself or for anybody else. You live your life in total freedom without any consideration what others will say. The people who are always considering others and their opinion are immature. They are dependent on the opinions of others. They can't do anything authentically, honestly. They can't say what they want to say. They say what you want to hear. Your politicians say things which you want to hear. They give you promises which you want. They know perfectly well they cannot fulfill these promises, neither there is any intent to fulfill them. But if they say exactly the situation truthfully and make it clear to you that many things you are asking are impossible, cannot be done, they will be thrown out of power. You will not choose a politician who is honest. It is a very strange world. It is almost an insane house. If in this insane house you become alert and aware of your being, you are blessed. Before we enter into the insane world, just to have a look what is happening outside, old priest Pooper dies and leaves only unpaid bills behind. After the doctors, the hospital, and all the others are settled, there is no money left to bury the old guy. So Grandma Nutkin decides she will go around the town and ask those who knew the priest to help provide a decent burial, she finds it is not an easy task, but after many long hours of devoted work, her collection is only $1 sar for the funeral. She looks around, but it seems she has asked everyone. Suddenly she spies a stranger sitting at the bus stop. Amazingly, it turns out to be Swami Deva Coconut. Grandma approaches him and says in a tired and worried voice, "Would you give me $1 to bury a priest?" Coconut jumps up, pulls out his wallet and hands her some money. "Lady," he says, "here are $5. Go out and bury 5 of them." Complaining of the distance between campus buildings, Velma, the vet's daughter, rides home for money to buy a bicycle. By the time the money arrives, she has changed her mind and has purchased a pet monkey instead. After a few weeks, Velma discovers that the animal begins losing all its hair. Hoping that her father might know a cure, Velma writes, "All the hair is falling off my monkey. What shall I do?" Her father sends a quick telegram that says, "Sell the bicycle." Mo, Larry and Curly, three of Poland's top intellectuals, and their Jewish friends Matzo, Bagel and Groucho all take the train together from Warsaw to Geneva. At the station in Warsaw, the Polacks purchase their 3 tickets and then are surprised when they see the Jews only buy 1 ticket. "Why did you guys only buy 1 ticket?" asks Mo, the Polak. "Just watch," says Matzo. "You might learn something." They all board the train and get underway. Then just before the ticket taker comes, the 3 Jews take their 1 ticket and took and lock themselves in the bathroom. The ticket taker punches the 3 Polak's tickets, then goes to the bathroom door. He knocks and says, "Ticket, please." The bathroom door opens a little bit and a hand gives out a ticket. The ticket taker punches it and goes on. The Polaks watch this and are really impressed. Later, returning to Warsaw, the 3 Polaks and the 3 Jews again boarding the train. This time the Polaks have purchased 1 ticket. But they notice that the Jews have purchased none. Just before the ticket taker is about to come, the Polaks all dash into the bathroom and lock it. Then Matzo, Bagel and Groucho go into the next bathroom. But before Groucho enters, he knocks on the door that the Polaks are in and says, "Ticket, please." Jimmy gets lost in the desert. He wanders around for 2 days, almost dying of thirst. When he comes to a nunnery, he knows the nuns won't let him in because he is a man, so he jumps over the wall. He finds the nearest bathroom and drinks to his heart's content. Then he decides to take a shower. He has just taken off his clothes when he hears two nuns approaching. They are coming into the bathroom, so he jumps naked behind the shower curtain. When the nuns come in, one of them sees Jimmy's prick sticking out from behind the curtain. "What is that?" she says. "I don't know," replies the other nun, and goes and gives it a pull. Thinking quickly, Jimmy throws out a bar of soap. "Look," cries the nun, "a soap machine." So the other nun pulls it and Jimmy throws out some more soap. Then the first nun pulls it again, but Jimmy has no more soap. So she pulls it again and again and again. Suddenly, she turns to the other nun and cries, "Look, shampoo!" be silent. Close your eyes. Feel the body completely frozen. No movement. So that the energy, your life force, can become centered in. Deeper and deeper. At the deepest point, you are the Buddha. This silence, this evening, is blessed because so many of you have touched for the first time your own reality. Your own eternity, to make it more clear, Nivedana, relax, let go, die. Become absolutely centered within you. Yes, this is the Buddha we have been searching for. This is the Buddha all the centuries have been searching for. Feel it deeply. Drink it deeply. Let this consciousness is spread all over your being. A day comes when it starts radiating all around you. That is the day of celebration. Nivedana, come back and for a few seconds just sit silently, collecting your experience. It has to become every day deeper, more profounder, it has to become an undercurrent in your 24-hour life. Waking or asleep, you are the Buddha. Can we celebrate 7,000 Buddhas together?